Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You remember the pictures. They began appearing just days after the BP Transocean Deepwater Horizon explosion. As millions of gallons of oil gushed into the Gulf, birds coated. They looked prehistoric, stuck in some sort of primordial slime, often the only thing moving their blinking eyes. More than 7,000 birds died because of the spill, but over 1,200 were rescued. And a new HBO documentary tells the story of one, Pelican 895.
The bird we picked up looks pretty heavily oiled, head to toe, completely encompassing his body.
This was a young bird, you know, about 10 weeks old or so, and not able to fly.
I think the bird was probably still associated with his parents, especially if he was not flying. They're probably wondering where he is.
Yeah, they probably are.
That's Mike Carlos, the biologist director for the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. He joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Mike, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And sitting right next to Mike, Irene Taylor-Brodsky, the director of the new HBO documentary, Pelican 895. Irene, welcome to you as well.
Hi, Robin. Thanks.
And Mike, just give us a sense of these birds. You know, we understand the timing of the spill, double disaster for the brown pelican, which is Louisiana state bird. And if you've been there, you see them in colonies, you know, with their big pouches under their long bills. They look like little pterodactyls. But they were wiped out in the 60s. Why? What wiped them out then?
The main problem was Enduron and DDT. You know, you had both direct mortality, primarily from Enduron, and DDT was the egg thinning issue.
Enduron, was this the fertilizer that people were using, you know, along the Mississippi River, and it was just flowing down to where the birds were?
Correct, through the Midwest, and it was flowing down in the Mississippi and getting into the food chain.
So killing the birds, but also, more important for their future, killing their eggs.
Correct, yeah. Yes.
Irene, your film takes us through the process of this one bird. Mike and his workers take the oiled pelicans as they catch them to the Fort Jackson Oiled Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Louisiana. One of the first tests, whether the animals can feed themselves. Let's listen.
Just to make sure that they're getting their fish, they're going to hand feed them to make sure that each bird's gotten something. They normally will beg from their parents, and the parents will regurgitate the meal to them. So our hands, in a sense, are kind of like that.
We watch these workers try to put fish down the bills, but then later, Mike, you and others throw the fish at them, hoping that they'll remember how to take it themselves, especially in the case of this 895 who's so young, and it's just heartbreaking. You know, the fish are hitting him, and he doesn't, you know, eat the fish. Irene, your thoughts as you saw these workers, you know, so many of them, you know, working so hard on these birds. Your take on them?
Well, first of all, you have to understand it was so hot. I mean, people were drinking as much water as they possibly could just to keep standing. And then you were inside this rehab facility, and people had to wear Tyvek suits. And people had to wear Tyvek suits out in the field when they were chasing birds.
These protective suits, which had to be hotter.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. From, you know, all the way to their wrists and down to their ankles. So, you know, they were working under extremely grueling physical conditions. And I think everyone from the folks in the field rescuing the birds and netting them to those who were inside the rehab facility, which was loud and noisy and very hot, very hot. Everyone, though, really kept a strong focus on the bird in front of them. And as a couple of them told me, you know, a doctor can't think about death every day, even though a doctor has to deal with death and dying. Otherwise, you just would have a hard time coming to work. And these workers were getting up at 4 in the morning to start their day at 5:30, and they were working till 10 or 11 at night. And, you know, in rehab, you'd see people taking their break, eating ice cream sandwiches, laughing with each other, even though they may have just had to euthanize a bird. And certainly that wasn't because they were insensitive. It was just everyone was trying to live through this ordeal. I mean, it wasn't an ordeal only for the birds. It was for the people, too.
They go along almost an assembly line of this rehab. They are transferred to different places for different parts of the cleaning process. Another critical point comes when workers get ready to wash the oil off the birds. Let's listen.
895 looks pretty good. He's in a stable enough condition to survive the washing process. And the washing process is really intensive for the birds. It's the stress level of on your body of running a marathon. So they really have to be in good condition.
Mike, why is that? Why is the washing of a bird like running a marathon?
It's so intense is primarily the thing. I mean, you know, you've got to essentially clean every feather to get it back to where it's functioning, because if it doesn't, then you've got issues, you know, and they'll never be whole again. And it's all about trying to make sure that they survive, that you do it right and do it complete so that, you know, so they can get back and fend for themselves.
And remind us there, too, why are those feathers being cleaned of oil so important?
Well, mainly hypothermia. You know, of course, the feathers are the protection from water, and they naturally have natural oils that repel water. And once you break that down, even in summer months, and those birds get wet, they get cold, and then hypothermia sets in, and that's a big killer of birds, especially in oil spills.
So we watch them go through the washing process. Sweet touches. There's a pre-wash marination lounge where the birds, you know, marinate in sort of a solution. So to help the oil wash out, and then these big spray, almost like a car wash, big sprayers to try to, as you said, get the oil off. A lot of effort. And at one point, you know, we are thinking, and someone actually comments, you know, there are people who are going to question, why so much effort?
Well, the simple answer is it's the right thing to do. As humans that utilize resources like that, that cause, you know, issues like this, and even if it were just a natural event, I mean, it's the right thing to do for the species and as human beings.
Yeah. It's a good ending. let's listen to a little bit of it first, and then I want to ask you about that. The day comes when Pelican 895, after another nerve-wracking spate, has gained enough weight to go back into the wild.
Oh, man, this is great. This is good. Almost surreal in this whole mess of an oil spill, you know?
It's a lovely moment. He's flying and circling. It's just incredible. And Irene, as we hear, there's, you know, lovely music accompanying it. It's a real feel-good ending. But did you ever worry that this may... You know, we know that since Exxon Valdez, oil companies are required to pay to rehab these oiled birds. But did you ever wonder that, in part, that also rehabilitates BP and that the film may send people away thinking, isn't that nice? No problem. All's well.
As a filmmaker, I don't really set out with an agenda at the start of my films. I'm generally a character-driven filmmaker, and I stick by my character no matter what happens. And in response to your question, in some ways, yeah, you could say BP just got a little lucky in this one, in that it looks like here is one bird who seems to be faring well. But it's important to remember that our bird was the exception and not the rule. Many more birds died than lived.
And Mike, what were you thinking when he flew off?
Well, I guess after all we went through, I was thinking this is a nice end to the story, but really it's not the end. It was an end or the beginning, really, of that story. And I was just thinking that hopefully, you know, at that point in time, we were all tired and had been working a lot, and that things would get better and things would slow down. And you know, we would never see anything of this magnitude in the future. But, you know, like you said, the potential is always there. It's out there, and hopefully we can find better safety mechanisms to ensure that these things don't happen again, or at least to this magnitude.
That's Mike Carlos, the biologist director for the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. He's one of the stars of the new HBO documentary from Irene Taylor Brodsky, director of Pelican 895. Thanks, both of you, for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.